And now the Great American Folk Show, a little place where we commune with you to share stories, to sing some songs, and talk to some good people with great voices. The Great American Folk Show began exactly 6 years ago to the day, May 3rd, 2020. And since then, we produced 171 original episodes and featured close to 1,000 guests from all over the world. Poets and painters and cafe owners, curlers, caretakers of buildings, and lots of musicians. One of my favorites is Glenn Phillips of Toad the Wet Sprocket reading a vignette that my father, James Russo, wrote entitled When JFK Visited UND. It aired in 2022. Ed, I'm going to include it on today's show, about around the halfway point, because the other day when I was in the grocery store, someone I ran into reminded me what a special segment it was, and I agree. Plus, Glenn Phillips and my dad make a pretty cool combination. I think you're really going to love it. Thank you for listening to the Great American Folk Show. We begin with Tamara Barshak, a classical pianist, and her compositional skills are also quite fine. I'm really fond, very taken with the way that she delivers her tunes. And this first one is just a nice way to spend a moment in the soft sun on a raft on a lazy river. It's called Dreams of You.
That saves you from you. I dreamed a dream of you. You looked through me like a pane of glass. We had no future, we had no past. I dreamed a dream of you. Reached out for your hand, ran through me like sand. Lost alone in a foreign land. In another dream, I see you coming to me, and then, like the sun, feel your warmth in your loving heart, and then, hand in hand, we hold each other close through the storm. The future's ours, it shines like a pearl at dawn. I dreamed a dream of you in another room. You played to the crowd, they felt your love, you took your bow. I dreamed a dream of you. I called your name, a haunting refrain, a song with all the words undone. In another dream, I see you running to me, and then, like the rain, you cleanse my soul and remove all the pain, and then, hand in hand, through the storm, the future's new, a golden dawn. I dream a dream of you. We held each other lost and found love as a new shade, a hint of truth. I dreamed a dream.
I wrote Embracing a New Age in the latter half of 2019, about 6 months before lockdown. One of the themes the song talks about is welcoming in change. And in 2020, the ballad went from something about personal reflection to a song that had global significance, when, of course, the world was suddenly forced to take on cataclysmic change in the wake of the coronavirus. I remember thinking as I played the song during lockdown, as I played through the bright, optimistic chords, I remember thinking to myself, well, there were some very positive things even about that period. Nature was allowed to flourish for the first time in decades. The world was forced to slow down. Societies were forced to go at a much slower tempo. And some people found an opportunity in this to reconnect with one another and to reconnect with themselves. Some of the lyrics in the song talk about shedding one's skin and changing the light that comes in. So it's really a song about rebirth, reinvention, and finding something illuminating and glowing within oneself. Now, the song definitely has jazz influences. It has jazz chords in it, but it's not a typical jazz ballad. It also has other musical influences in it, some classical chords. And in the pre-chorus, you have chords which have really been inspired by the music of Pete Townshend and The Who. Pete Townshend has always been a massive musical hero of mine. I listened to The Who a lot as a teenager. And I had the incredible opportunity in the summer of 2025 of being able to meet Pete Townshend and tell him just how much his music had influenced this particular song and how the music of The Who had really been the soundtrack to my teenagehood. Now, I said earlier that Embrace contains jazz chords and chords of other musical influences. And I think that really sums up the music that I write. It's a fusion of many, many different genres. On my first album, Kaleidoscope, which came out a couple of years ago, you have a jazz ballad, you have a blues song, you have a funk song, you have a bossa nova, which I wrote inspired by Brazilian music, which I sing in Portuguese. You also have a ballad inspired by the music of Joni Mitchell. So I guess you could say that it's a sort of smorgasbord of many different styles, and that I always get excited by mixing and fusing different styles within my music.
If you could touch me now, what would you find? If you could see me now, what would you find? There's been a million times you've been in my mind, but a million times more I've left you behind. Somehow I've grown you wings, I've changed the light that comes in. I'm embracing a new way.
Somehow I've shed my skin and pushed a new
That was Tamara Barshak with Embracing a New Age and Dreams of You. My name is Tom Brousseau. This is the Great American Folk Show. The word Tanasi is a Cherokee word that is said to have a few different meanings, but I think my favorite is gathering of rivers. Tanasi is also the name of the next musical act that you're about to hear, a trio based in Asheville, North Carolina. And in a moment, they will share thoughts about the rich musical heritage there. Anya and Mary from the group are going to join us. But before they do, check out this track of theirs entitled Get Up.
Get up, girl. Hey, my name's Mary Lucy.
I'm Anya Hinkle.
And we are missing our third member, Billy Cardine. He's teaching over in England at the Sore Fingers Music Camp this week.
And we are Tenasi, a world grass trio based in Asheville, North Carolina, taking global sounds and refracting them through our Appalachian lens.
Yeah, we all were drawn to this area. I had actually heard a lore that you couldn't throw a rock without hitting a fiddle player. And that brought Billy and I down here, and Anya came as well for the music.
Yeah, Asheville has always been a place of transformation. We all came here because of the heritage of mountain music, but also the desire to do something new, and the spark of doing something different, I think, has influenced us again and again as we've played this music through the years, traveled the world. And that's really the spark that brought this trio together.
Anya and I have known each other for a long time, but somehow it took us until about 6 or 7 years ago to finally sing together. And it was instant chemistry. It didn't take long for Billy to join in on the fun, and that's how the trio was born.
And since then, we've just discovered how we can make great music on the stage and in the studio, and also have such a great time traveling and all of the behind the scenes things with family and life that we're just able to manage and support each other every day.
We are so excited to share this music that we've been learning from beautiful musicians from around the world with all of y'all out there. So thank you for listening, and hope you enjoy it as much as we enjoy making it.
In January of 1962, my mother took me to the county courthouse to register for the military draft. I just turned 18, and all 18-year-old boys had to do that. Mom was pretty blue that day, in part because I was a senior in high school and would soon be moving away to college. But she was also worried, worried because there was trouble in Southeast Asia, and many young men were being sent there to fight in a war none of us could relate to. I know she felt the same way when my brother had to register the following year. My dad was worried too. He had fought long and hard in World War II, the war, as we still called it, and he didn't want either of his boys to have to go through what he went through. But it was our duty to register for the draft and go fight if we were called. No one in our family thought it would be right to resist. Since I was in good health, I got a 1A classification, meaning I was fit to go off to war if called. However, our president then was John F. Kennedy, and he had proclaimed that young men could get a deferment from the draft if they stayed in college and kept their grades up and got their degrees. That meant at least 4 years, and surely the fighting in Southeast Asia would be over by then. Everyone loved President Kennedy. We called him JFK. He'd been in the war. He'd written a book about it that we all read in high school called Profiles in Courage, about great American heroes. He had started the Peace Corps, and he had recruited role models such as the Olympic champion Rafer Johnson to inspire young people to do great things. We were all inspired by JFK. So I went off to college at the University of North Dakota with my draft card in my wallet. It said I was now 1AD, meaning I would be deferred from the draft as long as I was making progress in college. But I would still have to check in with the draft board every year. Once in college, all freshman boys were required to enroll in ROTC, the Reserve Officers Training Corps. We called it ROTC, and we had to take it for at least 2 years. We were issued uniforms, and we had to learn how to march and shoot an M1 rifle. Twice a week, we took classes on such things as map reading and military tactics. We were taught the chain of command and told what was expected of us if we were ever taken prisoner by the enemy. Our instructors were veterans of the Korean War, where they had all been non-coms, non-commissioned officers, and none of them had ever been to college. They were skeptical of us young college kids, especially to think that if we did go into the service, we would go in as second lieutenants. They were skeptical of our ability to lead other soldiers in combat. All of us in ROTC were skeptical of that too, but most of us did not foresee that we would actually be called to serve once we finished school. Some of my classmates were more inspired by the thought of military service, and they stayed in ROTC for their junior and senior years also. They became platoon leaders for the underclassmen. Most of these upperclassmen entered the military right after college, and many were sent directly overseas. So that's how it was in September of 1963, when I was just starting my sophomore year at UND, when we heard that the President of the United States, JFK himself, would be coming to UND and speaking in the field house on campus. Tens of thousands of people were expected to be present in hopes of catching a glimpse of JFK, and all of us ROTC students were going to be part of his security team. We were going to be in charge of crowd control. When I think about it now, putting 18 and 19-year-old college boys from North Dakota in charge of anything seems ludicrous, and we were going to be helping protect the President of the United States. That's almost in the realm of fairy tales. When the big day came, all of us gathered outside the field house to get our assignment. The President and his entourage would be coming in by helicopter and landing on the softball fields adjacent to the field house. 1,000 boys, all dressed up like little toy soldiers, would be linking arms and surrounding the field and pushing back against the throngs of spectators. We were told to keep our backs to the crowd, and under no circumstances were we to allow anyone to cross our lines. It was critical that we not break rank, for that might allow the crowd to swarm the President. No one imagined anyone would want to purposefully harm JFK. The worry was that he'd be hurt by someone who loved him too much. Our platoon leader, a guy named Phil, told me to stand near the point where the President was to exit the landing field. He did it as a favor to me, and I never knew why. The President flew into the Air Force base west of town and came to the campus by helicopter. A few minutes before he landed, we could hear the sound of the chopper coming in. It was exciting, and it was scary. I was standing next to my friend Bill, whose dad was a professor at UND. There were thousands of people crowded in behind us. They were already starting to push against the line. We held tight and braced ourselves. Just one single chopper landed, but it was a big one, and it made a deafening noise. Once it was on the ground, we watched as JFK and his bodyguards got off and were met by local officials and politicians. After a round of handshakes, they piled into a couple of Cadillac convertibles and headed right towards where I was standing. JFK ordered the car he was in to stop when they got to our line, and he got out and started reaching across the ROTC guys and shaking hands with some of the spectators. He wasn't supposed to do that, and the Secret Service guys who surrounded him looked nervous when he did. They were the toughest looking men I have ever seen. And there was the President of the United States, just a few feet away from me, reaching out to his adoring fans. It was a beautiful day, but it seemed like the sun's rays were all focused on JFK. He was all aglow, smiling and reflecting the light onto the people he touched. And then, without warning, my friend Bill let go of me and the other guy on the side of him and walked towards the President. It must have looked very suspicious to the Secret Service, and they muscled him out of the way, but not before he shook the President's hand. I had grabbed the guy who'd been positioned on the other side of Bill. We were really straining against the surging crowd, but we held on, and we didn't let Bill back in line until the President had entered the field house. We were all disgusted with him for breaking rank. Once JFK was inside the field house, the crowd outside relaxed a bit, but we kept our arms linked, just as we were told to do. There were thousands of people waiting for the President inside the field house. They cheered for a long time, and when he spoke, they seemed to break out in cheers about every 5 minutes. After about an hour, JFK emerged from the field house and got into the waiting car, and this time they drove right to the chopper. JFK didn't shake any hands this time, but he smiled and waved to the people, and they all went wild. Everyone loved JFK, Republicans and Democrats alike. All of us ROTC boys held strong as the President boarded the chopper and lifted off the field. Then our platoon leader came and told us we could disperse. But the people who'd come to see the President stayed for a long time, talking about what they'd seen. Everyone knew that Bill had broken rank, the only one of the 1,000 ROTC students to do so. We figured he'd get some kind of punishment, but he never did. And really, what could they do to him? Give him a dishonorable discharge from ROTC? He was a college student. Some of us thought he got off easy because his dad was a professor. Who knows? The worst part was, Bill never showed the slightest remorse for his behavior. In fact, he bragged about it. And that's what I'll always remember him for. Yes, I was jealous too. He had actually touched the President.
President Kennedy spoke at the university September 25th. All university afternoon classes have been adjourned, and the Johnstone Fulton dance have been canceled. The campus, like the nation, is only slowly adjusting to the shock. Good afternoon.
2 months later, JFK was riding in another motorcade in Dallas when he was shot and killed by a sniper. All of us who'd been on campus when he visited us were appalled. Everyone in the country went into mourning. But we knew that nothing like that could have happened at UND. People from North Dakota would never even think of such a thing. My friend, the deserter, Bill, was in a bad accident later that year. He was injured to the point that his draft status was changed to 4F. That meant he would never be called to serve. And Phil, the guy who stationed me where I'd get to see the President up close, he graduated and went into the service. He was sent to a war zone in Vietnam. One day while he was on patrol, he was shot and killed by a sniper, just as JFK had been. Years later, I went to see the Vietnam War Memorial in Washington, D.C. I knew his name would be engraved there somewhere, but I never saw it because I couldn't remember his last name. And I guess that's the way life is. We meet and mingle and laugh together, and sometimes we share momentous experiences. But then we go our separate ways, and a few years later, we don't even remember each other's names. And then, like it says in the Whiffenpoof song, we pass and are forgotten with the rest.
Support for the Great American Folk Show comes from the Lorac family, the estate of Blair Flegel, and Minn Kota Power Cooperative, helping meet the electricity needs of rural member cooperatives in eastern North Dakota and northwestern Minnesota. Our power is our people. More information at minnkota.com. Yeah. For North Dakota's official state sport, curling, it used to be not BYOB, bring your own beer, but BYOR, bring your own rocks.
Up until probably the mid to late 40s, you had to own your own curling rocks before a club would provide them.
Saddle up to the bar, which looks down at the curling club in North Dakota's magic city of Minot, and it won't take long to notice a rather large wooden box, or crate, if you will. It's called the Rock Box, and it houses two very heavy stones engraved with the name of a somewhat famous citizen.
The name on it is W.S. Shaw from Minot, and he was a mayor of Minot in 1918, but it's kind of the history of curling was you had to have your own rocks, and they weren't always uniform, they weren't all the same, and so that created some differences in how they bounced off one another and how they traveled on the ice.
That's Mark Hildahl. He's an avid curler, and he has deep-rooted connections to one of North Dakota's oldest curling clubs, which kind of reminds me, actually, of a Canadian rec room. We're at the fourth location, which is across from the Motor Speedway on the site of the State Fairgrounds. Over the years, flooding and a fire and a shifting ground forced changes in venues. But one of the unique things about this place is that some of the electricians and painters who built the cavernous gabled roof hall, they're also the members. And the place is thriving.
In the last several years, we've had an influx of young curlers. I think curling showed up again in the Winter Olympics. It's been on television. There's been some interest created that way. Curling has grown nationwide and worldwide in some fashion. And so we've taken advantage of that and grown our club back up now to, you know, 150 to 180 members.
Mark, who serves as treasurer and has been part of the Minot Curling Club for 62 years, remembers watching his father curl in the 1950s when the club was located at Riverside Park.
Hanging around the old Minot Curling Club, I wasn't old enough and strong enough at the time. I was about 10 years old. I couldn't get a rock to the other end, but I was learning how to sweep, and I was watching the game and learning the game as an observer. We used to hang out there, and you know, there was lots of other kids there, too, whose parents were curling.
Curling is everything in a place like Minot. Long winters, time between outdoor recreation activities, a Bonspiel boost to the economy. But when you check out the photos of the Minot Curling Club, you can tell it's totally social, connective city tissue.
It was important that the inside ice or the facilities were there to make it work so somebody could commit to something for a 5 to 6 month period and work at getting better, work at having more social interactions, having competitions, and getting out of the house, let's say, another night a week or so. So I think it was important to have something that people could count on.
A sport of good sportsmanship, where the winners often treat the losers to food and drink after the game, curling has sure come a long way since the mayor of Minot had to haul two 40-pound rocks and a huge crate. Nobody has to lug 100 pounds to play anymore. The only thing heavy was the lift at making this space successful.
We're really still proud of the fact that the curling club members paid for half the cost of this building, as well as all the ice-making equipment. The county fair paid for the remaining part, provided the land, and provided some of the funds for building the building. The curling club now leases the building back from the state fair. The curling club also maintains the club room, maintains the ice-making equipment, and pays the utilities during the 6 months that we're here. So we have a big commitment to make a nice place to create some activities on the fairground.
That's Mark Hildahl of the Minot Curling Club. It's the Great American Folk Show. Thank you for listening. My name is Tom Brusseau. And we continue with great voices. And welcome to the show, Chris Matthews, who's been labeled many things. Here's a few that I collected. The new Woody Guthrie, a poster child for intersectionality, someone who brings new spin to girl with a guitar music, and a social justice songwriter. My own thought is that she's found that thing that she loves to do, and she's doing it. Here's Forged in Fire by Chris Matthews, and then she'll join us with a live session.
Is there fire in your eyes?
Is there fire in your eyes?
We can melt that ice.
We can melt that ice.
If we stand and fight.
If we stand and fight.
We're gonna be alright.
We're gonna be alright.
Is there fire in your heart?
Is there fire in your heart?
Well, you can do your part.
You can do your part.
Be a shot in the dark.
Be a shot in the dark.
Till that powder spark.
Till that powder spark.
When faith is hard to find.
When faith is hard to find.
When hope is on the decline.
When hope is on the decline.
Remember hate gives time.
Remember hate gives time.
Keep that steel in your spine.
Keep that steel in your spine.
When faith is hard to find.
When faith is hard to find.
When hope is on the decline.
When hope is on the decline.
Remember hate gives time.
Remember hate gives time.
Keep that steel in your spine.
Keep that steel in your spine.
Is there fire in your mind?
Is there fire in your mind?
Get on the front line.
Get on the front line.
Cause old thinking dies.
Cause old thinking dies.
It's just a matter of time.
It's just a matter of time.
Is there fire in your feet?
Is there a fire in your feet?
They start marching to the beat.
They start marching to the beat.
No backing down, no retreat.
No backing down, no retreat.
Till everybody gets free.
Till everybody gets free.
When faith is hard to find.
When faith is hard to find.
When hope is on the decline.
When hope is on the decline.
Remember hate gives time.
Remember hate gives time.
Keep that steel in your spine.
Keep that steel in your spine.
When faith is hard to find.
When faith is hard.
When hope is on the decline.
When hope is on the decline.
Remember hate gives time.
Remember hate gives time.
Keep that steel in your spine.
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 This is Chris Matthews, and this is my song, In Her House. This song was written after two of my relatives were murdered by intimate partners. My cousin Charisse was murdered by a former partner, and my cousin Daphne was murdered by her husband. And the news of late has been a painful reminder of both of their deaths. So many Black women killed at the hands of intimate partners and former partners. Domestic violence is so very prevalent in this country. And those very overt signs of abuse, we're very good at spotting. But those covert signs, they just seem to slip right past us.
He tells her that she never does anything right. So she tries even harder to be the perfect wife. He gets so jealous anytime she goes out with friends. Never seems to be satisfied unless she's alone with him. All her family or her neighbors, they don't have a clue what happens in her house or what she's going through. When the doors close, when the lights go out, you don't know what happens in her house. Is he a good dad but a bad man when he gets mad? Does he lay hands on her house or broken things? Nothing is what it seems. He calls her every name except darling, till she says yes to all the dark things he takes part in. He tells her one more drink, even when she's had enough. Keeps her underneath his thumb when it comes to money stuff. But nobody around her seems to have a clue what happens in her house or what she's going through. when the doors close, when the lights go out. You don't know what happens in her house. Is he a good dad but a bad man when he gets mad? Does he lay hands in her house or broken things? Nothing is what it seems. So convinced that it's her fault, too scared to leave, too scared to call. So many women dead and gone at the hands of a lover, or love gone wrong. When the doors close, when the lights go out, you don't know what happens in her house. Is he a good dad but a bad man when he gets mad? Does he lay hands in her house or broken things? Nothing is what it seems. Nothing is what it seems.
This is the Great American Folk Show. My name is Tom Russo. And as I mentioned at the top of the hour, we've been doing this program pretty much on a weekly basis for the last 6 years. 171 episodes, over 1,000 people who share something remarkable. They don't have to be famous. They don't have to be infamous. They just have to do something that's remarkable. And there are so many people out there who are doing that. Andy Hedges is one of them. He's been on the program before. It's always nice to have him back. He's a cowboy poet and a songster. And he's a great guitar player and a very skilled songwriter as well. His new album, The Westerner, is full of acoustic greatness and storytelling perfection. Features guest appearances by Dom Flemings and Ramblin' Jack Elliott. Before we get to his live session, I want to play one of my favorites on this new record of his. There's a little song called Pinto. It's Andy Hedges on the Great American Folk Show.
Caro by trade, to handle my rope, boys, I'm not afraid. I lassoed old Taro by the two horns and throw down the biggest that ever was born. Oh, open door. A name to you I will not tell. What's the use? You know me so well. Girls all love me, their eyes fill with tears when I leave them to join the rodeo. Open door. I am a vaquero and here I reside. Show me the bronco that I cannot ride. Well, they say old Pinto with one split ear is the hardest jumping bronco on the road here. Oh, open door. Straight in our camp, an iron gray coat. The boys were all afraid, so my boat. You bet I stayed with him death cheer after cheer. He's the bronco twister who's on the road here. Oh, open door. Thank you.
go to Laredo and paint the town red. I'll go to Laredo and set up the beers for all the cowboys who work the rodeo. Oh, open door.
Howdy, Tom. Thanks for having me back on the Great American Folk Show. Today, I'd like to share a couple of pieces from my home state of Texas. I'm going to end with a favorite old cowboy song that's called I'd Like to Be in Texas. I'd like to be in Texas for the roundup in the spring. But I'd like to start with a piece of poetry. And in 1931, a woman from Albany, Texas, named Berta Hart Nance, wrote a poem for the Poetry Society of Texas annual competition for the best poem on a Texas subject. And up until that time, every year that contest had been won by a poem about cotton. And Berta Hart Nance was from cattle country, and she thought it was time for that contest to be won by a poem about cattle. And so she wrote a poem entitled Cattle, and it won the contest in 1931. And it quickly entered the oral tradition of what we call cowboy poetry. I first heard this recited by my friend, cowboy horseman and poet Joel Nelson, and I'd like to share it with you today. It's entitled Cattle by Berta Hart Nance. Other states were carved or born. Texas grew from hide and horn. Other states are long or wide. Texas is a shaggy hide, dripping blood and crumpled hair. Some fat giant flung it there, laid its head where valleys drain, stretched its rump along the plain. Other soil is full of stones. Texans plow up cattle bones. Herds are buried on the trail underneath the powdered shale. Herds that stiffen like the snow where the icy northers go. Other states have built their halls, humming tunes along their walls. Texans watched the mortar stirred while they kept the lowing herd. Stamped on Texan wall and roof gleams the sharp and crescent hoof. High above the hum and stir jingle bridle rein and spur. Other states were carved or born. Texas grew from hide and horn.
In the lobby of a big hotel in New York town one day sat a bunch of fellers telling yarns to pass the time away. They told the places where they'd been and different sights they'd seen. Some preferred Chicago town while others New Orleans. In a corner, in an old armchair sat a man whose hair was gray. He would listen eagerly to what they had to say. Asked him where he'd like to be, and his clear old voice did ring. I'd like to be in Texas for the roundup in the spring. And I can see the cattle grazing on the hills at early morn. I can see the campfire smoking at the breaking of the dawn. I hear the broncos neighing, and I can hear the cowboys sing, oh, I'd like to be in Texas for the roundup in the spring. Well, they all sat there and listened to each word he had to say. They knew the old man sitting there had once been young and gay. So they asked him for a story of his life out on the plains. Slowly removed his hat, quietly began. Well, I seen them stampede o'er the hills, do you think they'd never stop? I've seen them run for miles and miles until their leaders dropped. I was foreman on a cow ranch, that's the calling of a king. I'd like to be in Texas for the roundup in the spring. And I can see the cattle grazing on the hills at early morn. I can see the campfire smoking at the breaking of the dawn. I hear the coyotes yelling, and I can hear the night guards sing, oh, I'd like to be in Texas for the roundup in the spring. Well, there's a grave in sunny Texas where Molly Deming sleeps. There's a grove of mossy live oaks her constant vigil keeps. In my heart's recollection of those long, long bygone days, we rode the range together like truant kids astray. I hear her voice call to me in the watches of the night. I hear her laughter freshening the dew at early light. But a fever took my darling on the day we were to wed. It left her cold and lifeless at the crossing on the red. And I can see the cattle grazing on the hills at early morn. I can see the campfire smoking at the breaking of the dawn. I hear the broncos neighing, and I can hear the cowboys sing, oh, I'd like to be in Texas for the roundup in the spring. Lord, take me back to Texas for the roundup spring.
And that's our program for today. We'd like to thank you for listening. We'd like to thank our guests. You just heard a live session from cowboy poet and songster Andy Hedges. Tamara Barshak was on the program. Tanasi from Asheville. And also this little segment that we produced a few years back with Glenn Phillips of Toad the Wet Sprocket reading a vignette that my dad wrote, James Russo, when JFK came to UND. That's the University of North Dakota. Chris Matthews was on the program as well. Thank you, Chris. Support for the Great American Folk Show comes from the Lorac family, the estate of Blair Flegel, and Minkota Power Cooperative. Opening theme by Sean Watkins in Los Angeles, California. And theme by Burkham Boys in Council Bluffs, Iowa. Mary Jones is the talent producer. Eric Deathridge is the producer and editor. Elizabeth Brusso helps out with the digital realm. My name is Tom Brusso. May you always find that lucky old song until we meet again.